guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelker and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
12-2 run as soon as it got within 15. Bounce entry to Lopez. Knocked away easily by Baines. Ahead to Gordon Hayward. Drives through two men. Flips it off the window and in. Scored on the foul. And did Gordon ever need that?
Yep. Confident play. This time takes the ball all the way to the hole. Love that kind of stuff with the guy just wants to get back where he's at.
Highlight from last night's big Celtics win over the Bulls at home at the Garden as they return off the road and get right against a horrible team. What did it show you, Maz?
Nothing. I mean, not much. I'll tell you the one thing I did take out of it is that it appeared to me, particularly later in the game, that when Gordon Hayward was out there with the second unit, it worked better. And so there's been a lot of discussion lately about, you know, Hayward to the bench, work him at that second unit. And I think the big thing for me is that I just have a hard time seeing some sort of efficiency or chemistry in their offense with Irving, Tatum, and Hayward all on the floor at the same time. To me, it doesn't feel like it works. So one of them, and I'm not saying you can never use it, but for now, until they figure it out and get everybody comfortable and working right, one of them's got
to
go.
Well, so this is what stood out to me last night, is that they got off to a poor start. It was a tight first quarter, and Stevens after the game said they were tight coming off the road. They were tight coming off the road after a bad road trip. They were feeling it and squeezing it, and they felt tight. Maybe. Could it also just be that starting group doesn't work for the reasons you're saying, that you can't have Hayward, Irving, and Tatum on the floor at the same time?
I mean, it could be that simple.
Is it simple as that?
Yeah.
That five-man unit isn't meant to be.
Yeah, it could be, because that first quarter looked like every other ugly stretch of basketball that they've played this season. It's all the same. Missing easy open looks. Missing easy layups. Too many guys. There was one sequence in that first quarter that I wanted to throw my remote through my television, where it was like five different passes, and then they end up going to Baines at the top of the key, and he chucks. Oh, God. Yeah.
One of those push.
Yeah, it was a shot put three.
This little set shot push. Oh, my God. It's painful to watch.
And Hayward, if this is a sequence I'm thinking about, too, Hayward was open in the corner. Like, once it went to him, I'm like, okay, this is what he should be doing. Stand in the corner, chuck it up like Kevin Love, because it's something Gasper says all the time in the Celtics show. Nope. A couple of more passes. Back to Baines, top of the key. Shot put three, clang. Like, come on. Like, I get it. This is part of Brad's offense, and the nerds love the three. But just let the guys who can actually shoot, shoot. Or just go to the basket. That first quarter, thankfully, they were able to come back and beat the bag out of a terrible team, because the Bulls don't play defense, so fine. But that first quarter, like, enough. It looked like every other bad quarter you've seen out of this team this year.
So is that they have trouble with their starts? Are they not ready to go? Or is that just a bad five?
It might be a bad five now. You know, who knows later? Like, when I say later, because at some point, they're going to get into a game against a really good team, maybe in the playoffs, where they need their best five on the floor. And so what, like, do you want Stevens to have to sit there? I don't mean you specifically, but I mean, as a Celtics follower, you want to be able to play those guys together. You've got to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, in terms of talent. But outside of Kyrie, everybody else looks tentative. Like, without even getting technical, just watching that first quarter and how it's always looked with that start, with that five when they're on the floor. It's outside of Kyrie. It's, do you want it? No, I don't want it. Do you want it? What should I do with it? Do you want it? I don't know. Clang. Pass it some more. Who wants it? Should I take the shot? I don't know. Kyrie, I'll be the guy that takes over, because he should. It's frustrating as hell because of how talented all that collection of players is. It just doesn't seem to work.
Irving, Tatum, and Hayward, to me, should not be on the floor at the same time right now. We'll decide later on what it looks like in the spring. I just don't see how that works. I don't. And last night when I was watching it later in the game with Hayward and Rozier out there, and Hayward is effectively out there with the second unit, I thought Hayward looked probably as comfortable as he's looked all year. And Rozier would bring the ball up sometimes. Other times it was Hayward. Or Hayward would go out to the wing. Rozier would bring the ball up and then first pass to Hayward, and they'd start running their offense. And so they were really running it through Hayward. That's what it felt like to me. And it feels to me like that's when Hayward's at his best. So now he's got a choice. He can shoot. He can dribble. He can pass. He can do some combination of, you know, the three. Like, now that is, and they believe in their minds over there that Hayward is good at everything.
The point forward. They want him to play
that role. Yeah, he is. That's exactly what he is. It's a great way to describe it. He's a point forward. And so he needs the ball in his hands, and he needs it on the wing. Then he can beat someone off the dribble, or he can create and find the open man because he's a good passer. And if he's out there with Kyrie and Tatum, he's never going to see the ball.
I can't help but give my standard wise-ass response, so they don't make cartoon commercials out of guys who come off the bench. And the Instagram story is not quite as effective when you're coming off the bench, which is all a long way of saying,
will he do it? Can he do it?
Can they all stomach him being a bench player at max contract, superstar, commercial athlete, blah, blah, blah. That's sort of what they run into with that. And never mind teacher's pet and all that stuff. Can they all, can Hayward said he'd accept it. So that's apparently, if we take him at his word, it's good at that end.
Yeah, he's taken the first step. But just from an organizational standpoint, it is bad optics to have your marquee free agent being your bench player. They shouldn't, you know, get themselves all caught up in that nonsense. He should be on the bench.
I mean, you screw the optics. You do what's best for your team. And it feels to me like Stevens is playing a little, you know, playing some games there, too. Like, he goes on with Beadle and Zoe, and he says, well, no, we're not going to change anything. But it felt like he changed a little last night. I mean, maybe it's just me, but it felt like Hayward was out there with that second unit more. Felt that way to me. I don't know if it felt that way to you.
Okay, so we've got that. That was the main Celtics takeaway. I just want to give a little credit to Beadle and Zoe today. They were working on it. Just a wonderful little conspiracy theory there on the Celtics. I don't know if you heard it or, Stu, you heard it. But we talked about the oddity of that Kyrie Irving comment after the Portland loss, where he said, we need a 14, 15-year vet in here to come in here and show us, you know, you can't burn it so hard. It's basically what he said. It's a long season. You can't burn it so hard. You know what? That came right on the heel for like a minute, you know, minutes after. It came minutes after Marcus Smart apparently unloaded on the team in the locker room after that loss. So that's sort of step one of the conspiracy, that Marcus Smart comes in and yells at the team after that loss in Portland. And then Kyrie Irving, when he's asked about their situation a few minutes later, says, we really need a vet. Sort of like, well, Marcus Smart's been here 5 years, 6 years. How long has he been here now?
Longest tenured Celtic.
Thank you. Oh, there you go. The longest tenured Celtic just gave a fiery post-game speech to show guys how to do it. And you come out immediately right after that? You walk out of that locker room after getting yelled at by Marcus Smart saying, we need a leader? So Beadle and Zoe put that together. And then last night, do you actually have the cut, Jimmy, by any chance? You don't need it. But Kyrie Irving was asked about those comments and was asked about the situation. He says, well, we've actually got a lot of leaders here. We got a lot of guys who's been around. And then he mentions Horford, and he mentions Marcus Morris, and he mentions everyone but Marcus.
Didn't he mention Baines the other day?
I think he mentioned everyone but Marcus Smart. And I never actually heard the cut, but I heard Beadle and Zoe referring to it. And they went, huh, you're talking about all the guys. Okay, here's the cut.
I think I was speaking on in general for where we are as a team in terms of what we have in here as a group. And I was speaking to, you know, the responsibility that's put on me as well as Al, as well as Mook and Gordon to be the leaders of this team. And we're all relatively young as well. Al's the oldest out of all of us, but, you know, he's 13 years in, 12 years in. I think I was speaking just in general is obviously there's a lot of trade movement going on in the league as usual around this, you know, around this time. But I wasn't speaking to anyone specific. I just was speaking to, you know, maybe like a, you know, vet that's been through a championship run, a few championship runs, that's able to be patient with this team as well as understand what we're going through of just figuring out the pieces and how they mesh well together. That's all.
Okay, again, I never thought of this as all credit to Beadle and Zoe or Laufey, whoever put this together, but I think it's brilliant. Who's Mook? Is that Baines?
Marcus Morris.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know he was...
Mook Morris.
Okay, Mook Morris. So again... He mentions Al, he mentions Morris, he mentions Gordon Hayward, but he doesn't mention the longest tenured Celtic. And again, that's just someone to come here and tell us how to be patient after Marcus Smart got on them for not playing well, showing some impatience, I guess.
I like the theory.
What a great job by the midday there.
It's a good theory.
Right up the Felger and Maz alley, if you
so,
will.
So, like, you know, on the one hand, you say that they, you know, they're looking for a leader or there's a leadership problem. Maybe the leadership problem is that Kyrie Irving doesn't want Marcus Smart to be the leader. Like, I don't know, but it's a good theory.
But this is, again, just the timing of the Sunday night thing where Marcus Smart, the longest tenured Celtic, shows some leadership. And then immediately, minutes after, Kyrie Irving goes in front of the cameras and said, we could use a 14, 15-year vet in here. I mean, just you don't even need last night where he mentions Mook. and not Marcus Smart. So, like, I don't know. There's your thing. Like, I buy into it totally, as you know I would. But, you know, the personalities, the egos, that sort of thing that Brad Stevens has to conquer and this team has to get through, there it is. There's one. There's one little thing that 2 weeks in, you might be dealing with.
I mean, at the very least, what they need, and this has been true from the beginning of the year, is they need clarity there. Like, whose team is it?
It's Kyrie's.
Of course it's Kyrie's. Like, and this is where I get on Kyrie. Like, take it. What are you dilly-dallying for?
You don't want Marcus Smart yelling at you after the game? Then you stand up after the game.
To me, in the NBA, it's your best player. It's your best player.
And if it's not, you're probably in trouble.
Right. So he should be the guy. Again, this is where LeBron has scarred him, for crying out loud, because he thought LeBron was an a-hole, and so he doesn't want to be LeBron. So I understand that part of it, but then he's got to find another way because it's Kyrie's team.
Okay, your calls. Also, a Bruins thought coming up and a Mookie Betts. Not Mook Morris, Mookie Betts and the MVP. That thought coming up right after this.
Duggar Ness, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, so here's your Bruins song. We gave you the Zdeno Chara stuff earlier. If you're watching last night, it was a really good hockey game. If you stayed up for it, it was really good. It's a good game. At least first period. Where it was even up and down the ice. And Bruins hit like three posts.
I think it was four, actually.
Back and forth. It was really great hockey. And then Zdeno Chara went out at the end of the first period, and that basically opened the floodgates. And for the last at least period and a half, Colorado was all over you like stink on crap. Like they just skated circles around you and really separated from you. And, well, I don't think it was mutually exclusive. In other words, when Chara went out, there was a lot more room on the ice for Nate MacKinnon in that line, and they took advantage. And again, just, I thought, totally skated circles around you again.
I mean, the MacKinnon goal is the one I'm talking about. The one that put Colorado up 4-3. If you haven't seen it and you're a fan, go watch it. The Bruins looked like they sank into the ice. And Colorado just blew down the ice and the Bruins couldn't, it was like they were standing still.
So not that Char, you know, makes up the speed component, but just his size and his reach out there, I think, slows guys down. And the game changed when he went out. And those of you, I know there's a lot of you out there, who want Chara gone and traded and he sucks. You got a little glimpse of life without Zdeno Chara last night, and it was not pretty. Especially with all the other injuries. And so now, there was a time there last night that they had a pairing of Grzelcyk and Krug, which is just, that's a little on the short side for me, I'm sorry, for have one pairing. You can afford to have one Krug in there or one Grzelcyk, but you can't have two, and you can't have them on the same pair because you will get trampled, stepped on. And so now they've, you know, they're starting calling up guys that you never heard of. Clifton Carter? Who? What? But one guy that is getting his first crack is Jacob Zboril. That's a defenseman that you drafted 13 overall now 3-4 years ago. Is that year that you had three straight first-round picks?
2015.
You had three right in a row there. Bing, bang, boom. Because you were trying to package him and trade up to get Hanifin from Carolina. And the deal fell through at the last minute. And so then Don Sweeney is left there with his Schmenzer in his hand. But he still is a crack at a lot of good players. And now that we're 3-4 years into this, it's looking like a scary whiff in that draft. The three players you took were Jacob Zboril, the defenseman, Zach Senyshyn, a forward who has yet to be called up. And you've had a million calls up the last couple of years, a million. Guys back and forth. Senyshyn's never been one of them. And
DeBrusk,
who has hit and looks like a decent NHL player. I don't know if he's a star, but decent prospect there for sure.
I mean, he looks like a good player.
But the other two, Senyshyn can't even get a call. And Zboril will get his first start tomorrow night. His first game action tomorrow night.
So Kevin DuPont of the Globe had this note the other day about the 2015 draft, the players taken in the first round, and there were 30 taken that year, obviously. Okay, of the 30 players taken in the first round in 2015, all but three have seen time in the NHL already, and two of those are Bruins.
Ugh, boy.
And so, and Zboril and Senyshyn, those two guys. And Senyshyn, if you remember at the time, was a guy that when the Bruins took him, and they took him at number 15, he was the third of the three.
The hockey Christians went, what?
Yeah, like, how did they take this guy in the middle of the first round? He was projected later in the draft. That was like one of those Belichick picks of Tavon Wilson or who, the guy from Stanford that had cut.
Jordan Richards.
Yeah. Like one of those picks. Everyone went, huh? What? Senyshyn hasn't made it to the league. Zboril just got called up now when they've had how many defensemen go down? Like, it took how many different guys to get called up before they got to Zboril?
That's right.
And he's not in a game yet. He made the trip just in case they had issues. And even so, with the Chara injury, like, I don't know. Let's see if he gets in there. Who the hell knows? But then you look at some of the other guys that were taken after. There were four players taken after their. They had three in a row, remember?
They had three cracks at Matthew Barzal and are on the island. He was taken 16th, right after Zboril, DeBrusk, and Senyshyn. Matthew Barzal goes 16 to the Islanders. Matthew Barzal has 101 points in 101 career games.
Correct.
He's a point a game guy the second he stepped on the ice.
And there were four other guys who scored at least 30 goals.
Kyle Connor in Winnipeg is a front-end player for the Jets, 77 points in 113 games. And who else do you got there, Maz?
Travis Konecny with Philadelphia,
yeah.
83 points. And I'm going to butcher the name. Brock Boeser with the Canucks also has over 30 goals. He's got 37, 71 points in 84 games.
Okay, so the Bruins, correct me if I'm wrong, but was Lozon also in that draft? Was he the second or third rounder?
I'll check.
Okay, so Lozon feels like he's ahead of Zboril, and I think that's okay. Like, you got to hit on something there. So whether it's the 13th overall pick or the 43rd overall pick, you got to come away with the defenseman there when you have all those picks up high. Was
Carlo Forsback and Carlson and Lozon were all in the second round.
So all three of those guys have tracked ahead of the two that have yet to make the league. So that draft or that first round feels like a whiff. They made up for it in the later rounds. You know, those guys have cracked through and feel like they're prospects.
But they spent some collateral in that first round that year. Remember, one of those picks was trading Lucic for Martin Jones.
Right.
And they got one. Didn't they get, well, whatever. They spun Jones and ended up getting a first out of it. Like, so they made trades that got them this ammunition.
Yeah, it was Doug Hamilton and Martin Jones got them the two extra picks.
But effectively, if those picks don't hit, you gave those guys away for nothing. That's what that amounts to, is you end up getting, if those picks don't hit, you got nothing out of it.
Okay, there's your Bruins thought. We have your Celtics conversation and all your Patriots calls as well. We're getting to Mookie Betts and the MVP coming up. Brandon in Brighton's been waiting patiently to talk a Celtics thing. Go ahead, Brandon.
How you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my phone call. I just want to talk about Golden State right now. Just really quick, there's a turmoil going on with the team as far as Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. This is second displayed on national TV. Kevin Durant is going into 2019 free agency, and there's a video in the NBA, which was the offseason with Kevin Durant, Kyrie, and Jason Tatum. So I figure maybe we can get some money off the books and try to get Kevin Durant here. I think there's a big connection with Kyrie and Kevin Durant.
Okay, never mind Danny Ainge, who wanted him out of college. Wooed him out of college, says he would have taken him ahead of Oden that year. Never mind the trip to the Hamptons where they felt they were in it a couple years ago. So I think the connection is Durant and Ainge. If you're Golden State and you got these problems with Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant are free agents and may bolt because of it, what do you do?
You get rid of Draymond Green.
See a Draymond Green.
Yeah, that's what you do. Like,
you move Draymond Green by the trade deadline. This year, he's got to go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's an easy one.
I mean, see you later.
Yeah, adios, bye-bye.
And look, I think that's going to hurt him because he's their intangible guy, and every team needs a little bit of that. So I think that hurts Golden State.
You find another one.
But you figure it out. You don't keep the dirt dog as in place of the hyper-talented guy.
Not in that league.
Try and find another grinder.
Yeah, exactly. No, you got to get rid of Draymond Green. See you later, adios. You know, like that to me, and the other thing is, say what you want about like the prima donna factor in the NBA, which is huge. Durant shouldn't be a hard guy, though, relatively speaking. I mean, he's not...
What do you mean a hard guy in terms of like a hard O? Or...
No. Not a hard guy to keep on a team. Like, I can think of divas or pains in the asses that are way worse than Durant. In other words, if Draymond Green can't deal with Durant, what superstars are you going to deal with? Because I don't think Durant's super high on the diva meter.
No, it's all Draymond Green. He's a giant pain in the ass. That's one of the things that makes him great, but it's one of the things that makes him infuriating to be a teammate with, too. Did you watch any of the video or read about this story, too?
A little bit, yeah.
It got bad. And then even walking off the court, professional lip readers have now, like, zoomed in and saw that Kevin Durant mouth, and this is why I'm out.
He's
like,
going to the Knicks.
This is what he said. This is why I'm out.
Yeah, as after the two yelled at each other, and he was heading to the locker room or heading before they started the overtime period, he mouths this, and this is why I'm out.
Wow, Jimmy, Knicks.
Yeah, it seems like it's the Knicks or the Bullets for Durant.
And you don't think you're a realistic consideration?
No.
So meanwhile, Draymond Green, I think, spoke at the shoot-around out there today and said, you know, we've talked, we've moved on. But as recently as last night, when Durant was talking, I mean, it was unbelievable the way this thing was playing out. Durant is sitting up there holding a press conference. You know, have you talked to Draymond? No. You haven't talked about this? No. Do you think you will? Probably. Like, but it was, there was no, it's almost like he was resigned to the idea that we hate each other. What do you want me to do?
All these little NBA dramas. And you have a little mini one. You've got a mini one with Kyrie and Marcus Smart. Again, trademark midday show. Courtesy of them. Great little bit of rumor mongering there. So that's on the table. We'll get to Mookie Betts for the MVP. Got your panties already twisted in a bunch for Mookie Betts and the MVP.
I was going to say, if it's Kyrie and Marcus Smart, in which case you trade Marcus Smart.
We continue with your thoughts right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Of the season, and I mean anywhere in the major leagues, Mookie Betts slaughters a grand slam. An incredible at bat, an amazing inning.
That was a Mookie Betts grand slam that we all remember him dancing down the line, right?
Yep.
Who was it against? What was the score? What was it?
I know, we were all just sitting here trying to figure it out.
13-pitch at bat against the Blue Jays.
13-pitch at bat against the Blue Jays. What was the date?
September something.
July 13th?
All right.
July 12th.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, look, they played so many useless, worthless teams. Toronto, so White Sox, Baltimore,
worthless,
Texas.
Useless teams and nothing games that you can't even, like that. You know, when you ask, what was the signature at-bat or the signature moment of the regular season? That might have been it. And I couldn't tell you what game that was or when that happened.
Me either.
It was July? I felt like it was later than that. Against Toronto?
I Googled it.
That's unbelievable. In that sport.
When I really think about it, the signature at-bat for this team in the regular season was Brandon Phillips with that, was essentially the walk-off against Atlanta in September.
Okay, that was a good one. I mean, but anyway, Mookie Betts up for the MVP tonight. And he's expected to win it. He is the favorite. You guys have any thoughts on this? Maz, you got an MVP thought?
So to me, Mookie should, of the candidates that are in the, among the finalists here, Mookie should win it. But what I'm eager to see in the balloting is whether or not it just goes according to war. Like, is that what we're doing now? We're just going according to war all the time. And I know you've touched on this before, but that part of it really does irritate the crap out of me. Like, the whole point is that you're supposed to have a human being.
What are the war rankings?
Mookie Betts is number one. I'll give you the exact war rankings here in 1 second. Mookie Betts is number one. Mike Trout's number two. Matt Chapman of Oakland is actually third. And then Jose Ramirez and Lindor of the Indians. They round out the top five. Then you start getting into pitchers and everything else. So, interestingly enough, J.D. Martinez is ninth. Ninth. And we know why. Because he doesn't play defense and doesn't play it as well. And then he doesn't run well. So now, to me, J.D. Martinez was the MVP of the Red Sox. I think he's the most valuable guy in the team. But he's out. He's not going to win the award. We already had that battle. So let's see now what happens in this election. And if it just goes according to what the war number is, well, then what the hell do we need the voters for? Like, with all due respect to my fellow brothers in the BBWAA, use your brain. If you're going to go just by the numbers, I don't need you. What do I need you for? I need someone to use their eyeballs and judge it based on what they see. That's what I need them to do. Not on what the numbers tell them. Tell me what you see. That's why you have a vote. Now, they cast these things a long time ago. But the whole idea that the over-reliance on numbers now, particularly when it comes to members of the media and casting votes for things, really starting to bug the ever-loving crap out of me. Like, you watch the games. That's why they give you a vote. If you're just going to give me war because that's what the number says, what do I need you for? I'm going to eliminate the middleman. So that's my two cents on it. I want to see where it goes.
Okay.
If Mookie doesn't win, I'll be surprised. I'll be surprised. But of the candidates that are on that, you know, in the finalists, the three final guys, to me, Mookie's the best one.
Okay. Hunter in Swansea wants to weigh in on Mookie Betts. Go ahead, Hunter.
Mookie Betts had a great season this year. He didn't really show up in the World Series, though, but that doesn't affect the MVP. And
hey, Hunter, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Would you rather Mookie Betts win the MVP or be good in the playoffs?
I'd rather have him be good in the playoffs.
Okay, good. Keep going.
But, like, he had the best batting average in the whole league, and he had the best slugging percentage, and obviously he's the most valuable player. Like, he just played the best season. And the vote, like, I mean, the award doesn't even count, like, towards the playoffs, so...
Well, war counts in the playoffs, but they don't vote. The vote is taken before the playoffs begin. So Mookie Betts' poor postseason does not get held against him. Just like Alex Cora's great postseason doesn't benefit him. So both sides of it. Your guy's going to benefit from the ground rules tonight that the postseason doesn't count.
So he is going to benefit from it, no two ways about it. But this brings in another question about Mookie. And that is, let's just say hypothetically the pattern continues. He's got three more years with the Red Sox, right? Let's say he wins another MVP, maybe even two. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, he's good. There's no two ways about it. But let's say the postseason numbers stay the same way. Like, right now, what's his legacy?
Right now, what's his legacy among Red Sox fans?
Yeah.
Great young player. They love him 100%. They don't even think of the postseason. Okay. You think of the postseason.
Should they?
Well, shame on them.
Okay, fine. I'm just telling you how Red Sox fans view Mookie Betts. Very few hold his postseasons against him. I don't hear it. I hear it from you guys.
No, the fans don't.
And I'm not saying you're wrong, but
I don't know. There's a tone there, Mike.
No.
I mean, I'm just busting your balls.
I think you guys are right. That's the most important stuff, and he hasn't come through. So, you know, it's very legitimate from you. I don't think it rubs off on fans. I don't think the fans.
Oh, they get real mad. I put those numbers. I brought those postseason numbers up, and people really don't like the truth.
They get mad at you for bringing up his poor postseason. So you ask me, what's his legacy? Fans love him. They don't even think of the postseason.
Yeah, okay. Adorable, great smile.
Oh, and he also bowls a 300.
Yeah, what would he be to you?
He'd be frustrating to me. Absolutely.
I mean, to me, I look at it and say, if he wins multiple MVPs, I mean, one's bad enough. But he never produces in the October, and I say one's bad enough if you don't produce in October.
Right.
Like, they go, it makes it worse in some ways.
Yeah, he's baseball Peyton Manning.
Or A-Rod. I mean, really? That's the same kind of guy we're talking about.
Right.
And until he got on the juice, Barry Bonds was the same kind of cat. So I don't mean to pick on A-Rod. Barry Bonds sucked in October, too, until all of a sudden he discovered HGH and everything else. Then he got good.
Is that a message?
I'm just saying that if I'm Mookie Betts, I would put a premium. I would put... I just got that. A little bit of a delay. Yeah, seriously, Mookie. Talk to your trainer. See what you can come up with. But the idea that you could have a guy that could play that well during the regular season and then go the other way in October, Oh, that frustrates the hell out of me. So, look, good for him. They had a great year. I'm glad he won the award. Okay? And I think he's going to anyway. I'd have voted for the other guy on the team.
Oh, you would have? Oh, yeah. No, you would have voted for J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, I'd have voted for J.D. Martinez.
I thought you were going to go Mike Trout on
him. No. Among the finalists, to me, the MVP should go to the most impactful player on a contending team. That's the way I look at it. So, you know, of the guys left there, I think that is Mookie Betts. But if he ends up being a great regular season player who tanks in October, I don't care how Red Sox fans remember him. To me, he'll go down as Boston's A-Rod.
Okay, back to your phones on all of the above from today. Don't go anywhere. It's a long commercial-free segment.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mendes. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones as promised. Tommy in Dorchester hanging on with the Bruins thought. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hey, Mike, just give me 30 seconds if you could. A question and a comment. The comment is that 2015 will come back to haunt them like there's no tomorrow. You got one player, Jake DeBrusk, who's up there, and you got Hag said they brought Zaboral up, but he ain't going to play. They brought that other kid up. I never even heard of him. Stuff like that kills them, Mike. And, Mike, I know there's eight teams that Rask has a no-trade clause to. Do you know who they are, Mike, and what they might get in return if they were to trade him this year?
So you mean all the guys with the no-trade?
No, the teams that are on Rask's list for this year.
No, well, he gets to pick them. So this is just it. This is what someone said to me before. These guys with the no trade list, especially a goalie, can really handpick teams that aren't going to trade for you. Put them on your list and say, go ahead, trade me to the Rangers. Yeah, I'll accept a trade to the Rangers. The Rangers with Henry Lundqvist are never... Put Montreal on that list. Montreal with Carey Price signed up for 10 years and $10 million a year or something stupid like this is never going to trade for Tuukka Rask. So Rask can effectively, even with these lists that he has to give them, whether it's 8 this year or 15 next year, just give him 15 teams with solid number one goalies or expensive number one goalies, and that's it.
Right, you give him no options.
You've locked it. So hopefully the Bruins aren't too late with Tuukka Rask, meaning now he's untradeable. The time to do it was the last couple of years when there might have been a market for him. Now he's got two subpar years added on to this year, which has been a disaster. Never mind the off-ice stuff, which is going to factor in somewhere. His contract still blows. You can't trade the guy unless you swallow so much money that it becomes prohibitive. So you got to hope he has had a wake-up call with this situation.
I mean, the only way you get anything back now is to eat a lot of that money.
So, and on the draft, yeah, Zaboral is up, which is odd because they bring Zaboral, this 13th overall pick from 05, from 2015. They bring him on the trip in case someone gets hurt. Zdeno Chara gets hurt, and what do they do today?
Clifton Cook?
They call up something named Clifton Cook from Providence to come up and join the team. It's like, well, why? I thought you had Zaboral for this.
Right, that's it. Zaboral traveled with the club when they left.
Is Zaboral going to sit and this Clifton kid going to play?
Well, that would tell you something, wouldn't it?
Scary.
I mean, don't they have to play Zaboral now?
I'd like them to.
So I want to see him. I mean, let's see how bad it is.
Apparently, he's no great shakes.
So if it's that bad, let's see. I mean, the point being, if they brought him with them in the event of an injury, and then they have an injury and call in someone else, well, then what the hell did you bring him on the trip for? Like, if you're not going to put him in the game when someone gets hurt, then send him back.
Mark and Medford, quick.
Yeah, well, Chara getting hurt last night, guys. I believe that makes the bees down, what, four or five?
Four.
Starting deep right now?
Yep.
Four. So if Chara's out for any length of time, they're going to call up another young guy, which would probably make the combined age of the Bruins defensive unit about 85 to 90 years old, number one, okay? So whether Halak or Rask is in net in the near future right now, the Bees are porked on defense.
Oh, they were last night. I mean, I don't think Halak was sharp. There's a couple things he did I didn't like in that game. But I'm sorry, you got absolutely run around. After Char went off the ice, Colorado just totally skated circles around you. They were a buzzsaw. The Bruins went like 10, 11 minutes without a shot on net at one point. Like, they just got totally outmanned in that game. So, yeah, goaltending's been an issue this year. I mean, the fact that you're top 10 in goals against is a miracle, given that McAvoy's been out, Kevin Miller's been out, now Carlo's out, and you didn't have a great decor to begin with, and some of your better defensemen have been out. And your starting goalie's been a puddle, a mess. And you're still top 10 in goals against them. That is, Halak has saved their ass. But it's not going to hold.
And up until recently, I think up until that Vancouver game, they were in like the top three.
It's just not going to hold. He's not. No one is. I don't know if anyone could hold up to that, you know, all season. But never mind Halak, who's not an elite guy and is 33 to boot. So that there's a shelf life on that. When that runs out, oh boy.
Well, and given their problems on, you know, scoring on every line but the first, can you imagine, like you said, look out below if that happens.
Okay, here comes the Boohoo Mookie crew. Jake in Littleton. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, I just want to talk to you guys about comparing him to Peyton Manning.
Baseball Peyton Manning. Yep, baseball
Correct.
Peyton Manning.
Yes. I think it's a little ridiculous. The guy's played four full seasons, hasn't been in the postseason for all of them.
Yeah, he just missed one. So, he's been in the postseason, the three other ones. Those don't count? You're going to go with the smaller sample than the bigger one?
I think calling him the Peyton Manning is just a little bit of an overreaction, seeing as Peyton played 18 years as a choke artist in the postseason. Mookie's had three.
Jake, well, you realize, so there was a period of time there where there were guys who went their entire careers without getting 100 plate appearances in the postseason? So I mean, good players.
So you're saying he may not have a lot of years, but he's got a lot of plate appearances.
Is it 21 games now? Is that what it is?
I think he's how could I possibly know that number?
It's a lot. I don't look it up. Baseball
but you're saying like I have that answer. I know it's 21. How could I possibly know how many bang it?
21 games and 99 career plate appearances. Okay, we called Ted Williams a choker, which is fine. How many postseason games did he play in? Six? Like, you know, not that many. Seven. Realistically, it is what it is. The postseason sample is going to be short. It is.
Okay.
So deal with it.
Is it too early to call Mookie Betts the baseball Peyton Manning?
Probably, but it's not. No, probably.
So Peyton Manning came into the league in what, 98?
90, yeah.
By 2003, was that his first MVP? That was the co-year with Steve McNair. But everyone in 2003, 2004, around that time. So Peyton Manning's fourth or fifth season. Oh, it's the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. It's Marino all over again. Oh, Peyton Manning. Give him all the accolades. And he would consistently puke all over himself in the playoffs, mostly against the Patriots. Kept on losing in the playoffs by his third or fourth season, really. Mookie Betts is in his what season now? What season is he now in as a professional baseball
He's
player?
He's played, five full years.
Okay, so it does kind of compare. Huh, how about that? Huh, but I'm the a-hole for pointing out the truth. Just statistics. Not even an opinion. In fact, the man to my far right here would often say in the past, it's a fact, not opinion. Mookie Betts' postseason numbers, fact, not opinion. And I know I'm purposely being an a-hole about this because Betts is actually my favorite player on the Boston Red Sox, but he's not good in the postseason. We have a large sample size now, people. Three postseasons he's been there, and he's stunk in all of them. That one token home run he had against the Dodgers in the World Series, that's really it. That's really kind of all he's done. Yay.
I'm with Murray on this. I don't think it's too early to bring this up. Like, Red Sox fans are acting like, well, you can't bring this up yet. Why can't I?
Not talking about one postseason, you know, that when they farted out against the Indians a few years back, or Houston a couple of years ago.
The guy led the league in slugging percentages here.
It's over 100 at-bats, right?
Okay, 99 plate appearances, 21 games, he's got one home run. One. His career batting average in the postseason is .227. His OPS is .654. It's not okay to ask what happens to Mookie in October?
No. How dare you? No.
And it's true, though. You know, fans do. They love this guy.
Yeah, because of the great smile. Yeah. He can solve a Rubik's Cube in under 2 minutes, and he can also bowl. Very marketable. Oh, and we love the chain that he got from the child. It's all a great story. I love Mookie Betts, believe it or not. Even though I'm purposely being an a-hole about this, Mookie Betts is my favorite player on the Boston Red Sox. He's not that good in the postseason. It's getting extremely frustrating. If it's not frustrating you, you're not paying attention.
No, it must be that he's cute. Like
it is. It's the smile. Well, yeah. Cute. Well, adorable.
He's got a very
Mookie.
Kyle in
Let's make him the team mascot.
Kyle in New Hampshire, your thoughts?
Hi, I was just wondering, look, first of all, I know Mookie sucks in the playoffs. I'm a huge Mookie fan. He sucks in the playoffs. But if he didn't have his MVP season that he had, do the Red Sox still get first place in the division, and do they win the World Series, or do they lose to New York when they have to go against them you know, as a wild card winner.
So, does Mookie Betts get postseason credit for getting him in a position into the postseason? Yeah. I mean, that's what the caller's saying.
Well, sure, yeah.
If he doesn't have this kind of regular season, are they even there to win the championship?
Well, I don't think he has this kind of regular season without J.D. Martinez. Sorry to cut you off there, Mass.
No, that's a good point. I mean, again, I think J.D. Martinez had the most profound impact. But if you were to tell me, do you take Mookie away, did they make the playoffs? Probably. But are they as good? Do they win the division? No, probably not. I mean, I'm not disputing how good he is during the regular season. The question is, how does a guy perform at that level? Almost year in and year out now. Now, last year he wasn't as good. At 2017, he wasn't as good. But then get to October and just be borderline useless at the plate. Really? Like, where does it all go? Now, if the caller wanted to say to me, how about the defensive plays in Houston? I'll give you those. Those count.
Oh,
absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, no, as a defender, yeah. No, he was great.
Like, I thought that's where the caller was going to go. Well, how about the defense? No, he was a factor in that Houston series. But again, I think that was a bit of a aberration. And when I say aberration, not based on his ability. How many postseason games were there this year, and how many were really decided by defensive plays?
Well, how many games can you count on a right fielder to win for you?
Exactly. It's a relative rarity.
Yeah, game four in Houston. I mean, he was made that ridiculous play.
So if you were to ask me, take him out of that game, do they win it? Probably not. Do they win the series?
Yep. Okay, your thoughts on that, your thoughts on Celts, your thoughts on Bruins, and we'll reset our Patriots take. The lead Patriots take today is, well, something's changed on the team, and it ain't the defense. And it ain't really the weapons, and it ain't really the line, and it sure ain't the coach. What's different about this year's Patriots team, and how do you feel about it? We'll discuss it right after Murray's up.
Great year, all that. So I think Mookie Betts is a problem.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.